objective, constructive, creative, solid vox, the voice of intellectual adventure. Welcome to Protos Worldwide on the Solid Vox Network. My guest today will be Dr. Michael Hurd, and we're going to talk about basic principles of self-improvement. Now, I don't know about you, but do you know what I enjoy most? People telling me all my faults, all the ways I could improve myself. And there are so many better ways, so I understand, from what others tell me, that I could do things in some improved way, according to others. Sometimes I even wonder whether I'm perhaps even special. There are so many areas in which I find I could improve in, according to others. The way I dress, the way I live, the way I talk, my idiosyncrasies, all these things are subject that people could point to me and say, Protos, you know, why don't you do this instead? In fact, the more some people know about me, the more they have to work with. It's like I'm a kind of a raw material that they can shape. Now, the amount of advice that's available at any given moment is incredible. I think if you could harness all that energy, you could probably run all the electric lights across three continents. But the only problem is that a lot of that advice that's coming at me seems to be contradictory. Different people have different advice about how I should improve myself. And there's one other problem that I have with people's advice, and that is if I followed it, I'd end up like them, and that's not very appealing. So today we're going to focus on not how other people can improve me, but how I can improve myself. Are there basic principles that maybe I could latch onto, that I could apply to achieve my goals? And shortly we'll cross over to Dr. Michael Hurd to speak on this subject, which I think has relevance for all of us in our pursuit of happiness. But first, a word from our sponsor. Let me tell you something very scary about robots. There are now factories run almost entirely by robots. Yes, real live robots. They build cars. They assemble refrigerators. They mine for precious minerals. There's almost nothing that robots can't do. And what's really scary is that soon we'll have factories run by robots building more robots. If you've seen movies like Terminator or iRobot with that big black hunk, Will Smith, you'll know what I mean. Oh yes, you'll know what I mean. But what's even more terrifying than robots building robots is when a domain name sells domain names. This is what it's come to. A .com that sells .coms, that sells them at prices that are frankly taking over this world. ILoveProdos.com now offers terrifying, death-defying, low prices on .com domain names. $7.85 per year? It's like they're screaming at me, man. Buy a domain name. Buy a domain name. Get a .com. $7.85 per year, for God's sake. What's become of us? Damn you, capitalism. Damn you all. Look at what you've done to my .com world. All right. Go to ILoveProdos.com for this godforsaken world's cheapest .com domains. Oh, and by the way, you can also buy robots online at iloveprodos.com. Yes, robots. Just visit our science education e-shop. You'll love the online megastore that shouts, "We love capitalism." iloveprodos.com. You're on the Solid Vox Network on the Protos Worldwide Show, and my special guest is Dr. Michael Hurd. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Protos. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm all hyped up from that ad, actually.
I love it. I'm ready to go to iloveprotos.com, right? So I can stay away from the computer during our interview. I want to concentrate.
Yeah, focus here, right? Don't be distracted.
Right. No attention deficit disorder. disorder here.
Oh, right. Okay. There's an area for improvement. That's one I get too, actually. Why don't you focus more, Protoss? Why don't you concentrate more on things? You know, are you listening, Protoss? Actually, I'm a very good listener. But one of the difficulties about self-improvement is that a lot of people approach self-improvement when they have a problem. Personally, I believe in ongoing self-improvement and looking for ways that I can better my thinking, better my health, better myself in every way possible. And that's very difficult to do. I'm curious, to what extent can we improve ourselves, and to what extent, you know, and when do we need to get help? Is there a lot that we can do as self-improvement, that we can take charge of ourselves, Dr. Michael Hurd?
Well, Protoss, you just hit on probably the central issue with self-improvement.
Right.
It has to be an ongoing task.
Right.
It has to be something that we do throughout life. If we back up a second and look at it, the way I would put it is we need to have an attitude of self-improvement.
Oh.
Ideally, in our childhood, our parents and teachers are doing everything they can to instill an attitude of self-improvement in us, not in the sense of telling us what to do, especially
yeah.
without reason,
right.
but just in encouraging us to ask proper questions of ourselves so that, you know, in a realistic, constructively critical way, constructively is key there,
yeah.
we have that attitude. Now, many of us, probably most of us, didn't get that. That's okay, the past is over, but the key is to develop it in the present. You know, I'm always saying, if you look at, like, you know, I'm going to the dentist tomorrow, and
right.
I'm sure the dentist will say, well, you know, you have to floss every day, floss regularly, brush your teeth, et cetera, et cetera. That's an ongoing thing. If you ignore that, then you start to run into problems. Why isn't the same true with self-improvement? Because you're right, Protoss, most people that I encounter in my practice, they come to me in a context of a crisis.
Right.
But it's a crisis most of the time that never had to happen.
Oh, I see.
Usually people aren't coming to see me about some unfortunate event, a tragic event, or something that was out of their control. I mean,
yeah.
people certainly do need to talk about those things sometimes. But
right.
probably 85, 90% of the time, people are coming because they're experiencing symptoms
right.
of anxiety or panic or whatever it is.
Right.
But when,
so
when
pain
you
is
away the
pain,
layers,
pain
you find
is,
out they weren't paying attention to what was important.
Paying attention within themselves or outside of themselves, or both?
Well, either or both.
Right,
yeah.
right.
I mean, a lot of times there are some problems with having paid attention to your career development, but that requires ongoing introspection, because if you've been miserable in your career for 5 years,
yeah.
and you're only now naming that fact, well, I mean, it's great that you're naming it and you're going to have to do something about it,
yeah.
but it would have been a lot easier if you had paid attention introspectively inside, you know, to what was bothering you about the career when, you know, maybe the problems could have been addressed, or
yeah.
maybe you could have made a change earlier.
Yeah, that's very hard, though, Dr. Michael Hurd. Paying attention, see, one of the problems is when I look inwards, I often see the solution, what I find, let me just step out of myself for a moment, because it's a lot easier to talk about others. You know, I have this friend,
sure.
I have this friend, actually, Michael, and he's got this problem. But seriously, but often when people look at the solution, they see it, the solution often perpetuates the problem. I'm just saying the very thing which caused the problem also makes it impossible to solve it sometimes. I think it's an inherent problem with introspection. It's the challenge of introspection, is it not?
Well, introspection isn't as hard as people think it is. For example, I'm always encouraging the people, keep a journal, write down what you're feeling, what the causes of your feelings are, and just keep track
really?
Of those things. But most of the time people say, well, how do I keep a journal? What's the right way to keep a journal? And,
yeah.
you know, that's part of what they'll hire me to do, to show them the they're doing it correctly. But I always tell them there's not really any absolutes to it other than one absolute is you write down what you're feeling without censoring it.
Right.
And the other absolute is that at some point you bring reason and facts and logic into the process. You don't just let your feelings run wild.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, you're aware of what's going on, and your conscious mind can pretty much take it over once you've gotten out of your subconscious all the things that are bothering you.
I see,
but
I see.
But a lot of people, I mean, a healthy, virtuous person is an action-oriented person.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to knock that for a second, but sometimes people who are action-oriented focus exclusively on action and they don't stop and think about the relevance of what they're feeling and what's bothering them.
Yeah.
And then that connects back to self-improvement, because then in the process of not, one consequence of not introspecting regularly is that you don't, I mean, how can you have that attitude of continuous self-improvement? You know,
right.
you tend to just drift from crisis to crisis.
Right.
And, you know, I mean,
yeah.
people can survive that, but it doesn't have to be that difficult.
Okay, so at the outset, you mentioned, and it's still sort of bowling me over, and because I think it's quite a powerful truth, to have an attitude of self-improvement and to develop that. So that suggests to me that this is a goal in itself, like it's a prerequisite in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Your life doesn't have to be in transition. You can be perfectly happy with your career. You can be perfectly happy with your marital, romantic life, children if you have them. Everything can be sailing along quite well.
Right.
But it's still important to pay attention to what you want. I mean, if you have kids, for example, and your kids are growing older, they're going to become less and less of a responsibility as time goes by. So you need, we talk, in the U.S. at least, we talk a lot about the empty nest syndrome. Well, a lot of that happens because people haven't paid attention, you know, good, serious, conscientious parents haven't paid attention to their inner life while they're raising the kids. And of course, the knee-jerk reaction is, well, I don't have time. I'm raising kids. I've got bills to pay. Well,
so no, you call it the
end. 15 minutes a day.
Yeah.
I call it rational religion sometimes.
Oh, okay.
You know, religion for the self, though, not religion to some kind of deity. On
right,
the
right.
But just spiritual, if you want to call it that, but
yeah.
regarding your own happiness on earth, regarding your real life happiness.
Right, your rational religion. Actually, one of the founding fathers, who was it, said that my mind is my church. Who was
I read
was that,
that
Thomas Paine? Or
I don't know if it was Ben Franklin or maybe Thomas
Jefferson.
Oh,
yes, Ben Franklin.
I remember reading that.
I think it was Ben Franklin,
like Ben
actually.
Franklin.
It sounds as mighty as Ben Franklin, that sort of statement. It was either him or Thomas Paine. One of the greats, anyway. It's interesting, actually, that such a saying could come back then in the Age of Enlightenment.
Oh, my God.
Because that was also the age of where rational thinking, where at least in the West, mankind said, look, we can solve problems through thinking, which seems to be very much in accord with what you're saying, Dr. Michael Hurd.
Exactly.
They believed in thinking. They believed that you could identify issues, problems, opportunities, and go and work on them.
Right, and we're talking here about thinking applied to one's personal life, to one's personal satisfaction.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us are familiar with, well, thinking applied to your bank account, thinking applied to what house you're going to buy, where you're going to buy it, your investments and inventions, discoveries, and that's profoundly important.
Sure.
But we also have to remember we all have a responsibility to ourselves to apply thinking to our personal lives.
Yeah,
not just in the context of, you know, when you have psychiatric symptoms.
Well, you know, I think a lot of I think introspection also has a bit of a bad name, and I think some of the tools that people pick up here and there, whether it's I mean, some of them are good, but some of them are silly, and they might see their friends or their family applying some of these tools, whether it's a particular religion, and not all religions are bad or equally, you know, bad, or they might, you know, get some pop psychology, and some of it works, and some of it's dumb. They might get some new age stuff, and some of that, you know, is okay, and some of it is, well, a lot of it is silly as well. So I think introspection and self-improvement maybe have a bit of a bad rap out there.
Oh, yeah, some of the tools are self-evidently silly. Some of them are more helpful than others. But even with the ones that are helpful, the problem, it goes back to what we've been talking about. I have found some tools that are very helpful, and people I work with agree that they're helpful.
Right.
But one of the problems is if they're in a psychological crisis, it's kind of hard to implement those tools all at once.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that they can. That doesn't mean that's a permanent excuse. That's perfectly understandable. But if we take a preventative attitude, it goes back to the analogy of, you know, brush your teeth and floss your teeth every day.
Yeah.
You're going to have a lot fewer problems. That's
right.
The whole thing. And so my challenge in my work when I'm doing therapy and life coaching and that sort of thing with people is, you know, helping them see that that's the case, you know, when they're not in a crisis. And then if they are in a crisis, you know, trying to help them see that they can think their way through this, but
right.
they can't do it all at once because a lot has built up.
Right.
It's correctable, but, you know, you got to be patient here and give a little bit of time.
Sure, sure. My guest is Dr. Michael Hurd, and our topic is basic principles of self-improvement. I'm just going to do a quick ad, and we'll come back and talk a bit more. Have you listened lately to the Danish cartoon caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad? No? Well, they're a riot. But they're about the only thing not available currently at the iloveprotos.com audio book e-shop. You can buy or rent from the world's biggest and brainiest collection of audio books. All available right now from iloveprotos.com. Enrich your mind. Find inspiration. Have a laugh. Use your time efficiently with a massive range of top quality audio books available right now at iloveprotos.com. We've got history, novels written by geniuses, humorous short stories, audio books about science and technology, and lots, lots more. You can own audiobooks of Ayn Rand's novels, such as Anthem, Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead. You can own audiobooks about Thomas Jefferson and the American Founding Fathers. You can listen to the complete and unabridged versions of P.J. O'Rourke's hilarious and devastating works, such as Parliament of Whores, or All the Trouble in the World, The Lighter Side of Overpopulation, Famine, Plague, and Poverty. And at iloveprotos.com, we've got over 1,500 newspaper and magazine titles, all available in audio book form. Biographies, science fiction, philosophy, economics, romance, self-improvement, how to succeed in business, listen and learn. Whether you're one of those people just like me who really loves learning and improving himself, or whether you're one of those other people just like me who enjoys a good laugh and a good story, let us delight you today. Let us invite you today to visit the online megastore that shouts, "We love capitalism." Go shopping at iloveprotos.com. Not currently available in Syria, Pakistan, Iran, Lebanon, and other theocratic dictatorships across the Middle East. And now we cross back to Protos Worldwide and our special guest on the SolidVox Network, Dr. Michael Hurd. Michael, I'm thinking of two things here. One is pain. And the other one is goals, because I think there are two occasions when I say to myself, I've got to become better in some way. One is when I'm in pain and things are going wrong, but I personally, I don't know how common this is. I tend to spend most of my self-improvement energy developing myself because there's something I want to achieve, even if it's like for 20 years hence, and I think I've got to master this skill. I've got to become more tidy because in order to run a, say, the SolidVox network, I've got to, you know, organize my time better. In other words, I have a goal and I kind of work backwards. What do I need in order to achieve my goal? That's the thing that's most motivating for me.
Like an athlete. It's like the psychological and the intellectual equivalent of what an athlete goes through, when he's trying to improve his skills at running or playing basketball or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's interesting because I'll tell you something, Michael. I'll tell you where I started learning my self-improvement, setting my goals. I grew up on Batman comics. That's where I learned to speak English, through reading comics, Superman and Batman comics. And Batman was like the self-made man, the ultimate self-made man, physically, intellectually, in terms of pursuing justice. It was a little bit altruistic at times, I accept that, and I know better now because I've read Ayn Rand. But the attitude, you see. And he also trained Robin. And he mentored Robin. So I learned very early on, about striving towards a higher ideal, and that always has kept me wanting to improve myself. Now, is that common or uncommon?
that is not as common as I would like to see, and I worry sometimes it's becoming less and less common with young people.
Right.
I mean, I don't have to restate all that's been written and said on how there's a lack of heroes in today's culture.
Heroes.
In terms of fiction or reality.
Heroes.
And a lot of the problem is how do you define a hero?
Right.
But I would love to, I guess I could put it this way, I would love to see more young people getting inspired by characters like Batman. And you know,
yeah.
I mean, the movies are out there. I think there's still Batman movies, Spider-Man. I haven't had a chance to see them all.
Batman Begins is great. Batman Begins is fantastic. The earlier Batman ones aren't that good. And we've got that means.
Now, the thing, I'm not saying this is how you took it, because it sounds like you took things on a very sophisticated level and then advanced them for yourself.
It's the kind
time,
of the kind of guy I am, Michael. I'm a sophisticated kind of guy. You know
right.
what I mean?
Well, I mean, you're Protos, after all. But a lot of times, even when there's a positive reaction to the action character in comics or on television or whatever, that's a very good thing.
Yeah.
But there's not enough of the internal.
Right.
And I'm not criticizing Batman comics. I'm just saying the individual doesn't recognize that part of how you succeed and progress in life is paying attention to your inner life as well.
Right,
you know,
right.
And recognizing what's going on so you don't act blindly. On your emotions.
Okay, so we've got.
I always tell people if you don't pay attention to what your emotions are, your emotions going to end up controlling you.
Right.
And that's why a lot of people feel out of control about their emotions, and extreme cases make excuses about, you know, in these criminal cases they punch somebody or kill somebody even, and well, you know, I was suffering from rage disorder or extreme depression. Well,
yeah, but that's just rationalization. That's just rationalization for thuggery. But there's three things that we've now touched on, which come home hard to me. The first one, of course, develop an attitude of self-improvement. Number one. Number two, keep a journal, or if I can sort of abstract the concept there. In other words, find ways of reporting to yourself what you know, facing what you actually feel. So I might feel something very stupid, but at least one of my starting points I gather from what you're saying is at least face that. Like I might, you know, I might.
Yes.
I might feel that this, you know, I really hate this color, or I can't stand the way this person eats or talks. Well, face that and don't judge it. First, put it out there, objectify it in a way. So that's the keep a journal idea, yeah?
Exactly.
And then
this is where self-esteem starts to enter the picture, Protos.
Oh, how's that?
If a young person is doing this, or any age person is doing this,
yeah,
they become more concerned. They become more self-centered in a good sense.
Right.
They become more and more concerned about what they think of what they think, what they think of what they're doing.
I see.
What you think of what you're doing, what I think of what I'm doing. And by definition, that makes you less concerned with what so-and-so thinks. Now, if so-and-so happens to be someone who has earned a lot of respect from you, you're going to pay special attention to them. But you're not going to be so concerned with just any so-and-so or just people in general.
Right, right.
Because you have that self-esteem. You know what you think of yourself. This is a problem with a lot of teenagers today, I find, because I counsel a lot of young people as well
right.
as adults, 17,
so what,
16, 19.
Right,
and they,
problem ages.
Right. They don't know how to make assessments and judgments about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they just tend to look at their peers. Not all of them, of course, but a lot of them tend to look at their peers for approval, the nod
right.
of approval. And they don't really think for themselves. That's why I love to get a young person into counseling or therapy, because my job there isn't to pathologize them and make labels and excuses and all
yeah.
the things they think I'm going to do. My job, or medicate them, my job is to help them feel good about thinking for themselves, but make sure they're really thinking rationally.
Right, thinking for themselves.
And that capacity is there. It's absolutely there.
Right. Now, it's interesting. What occurs to me here as you're talking, Dr. Michael Hurd, about the connection between self-esteem and introspection is that what occurs to me is that the more acquainted one becomes with introspection and recognizing one's own feelings, the more you realize that there is a logic underneath it. In other words, see, when I don't identify a feeling, this happens to me just about every day, when I don't identify a feeling, I'm kind of drifting along. But I find that when I identify it, I can now say, oh, that makes sense. And that actually, that helps me a lot, because now I see that it's not just random. There is a basis to it, even if it's an error. Nevertheless, it's something that I constructed. It's not just a blob.
Exactly. And you don't even have to say things are stupid. You can say things are an error and feel good about the fact that you corrected your error.
Ah.
But how would you ever correct your error if you didn't bring it to the conscious level?
So this, like, this is like, this is like
value,
the...
Sorry, right, keeping a journal or talking to somebody like me or just a trusted friend, a trusted confidant, spouse, whoever.
Right. So in other words, I can. It's like a person who's been lying, and they say, "Well, I admit that I'm a liar." Now the media says, "Look at what an honest guy. He's admitted he's a liar." So in other words, if I think something's stupid and I identify it, now suddenly I'm smart for admitting that I'm stupid, right?
Right. Well,
just kidding.
Lying's a little trickier because it's deliberate. But right. You know, our subconscious can make all kinds of mistakes all the time, and that's okay. That's no problem. It's just so we keep track of it, and we don't let it lead us down the wrong path.
Right. Okay. Now we got, as we said, attitude of self-improvement. Number one. And these are not in any order. Just identifying things as Dr. Michael Hurd mentions them. Keep a journal and whatever is the equivalent of that. And then the third one you mentioned, which grabbed me strongly, was heroes. So are you suggesting that we should seek out heroes? Do you prescribe heroes to your clients?
Oh, absolutely.
You do?
Whenever possible. But it's deeper than that. You see, from a psychological point of view, and this goes along with introspection and ongoing attitude of self-awareness, we have to have some explicit idea. The more explicit, the better. Often it's vague and emotional. That's a start. But we have to have some explicit idea about what we consider to be the ideal person, the ideal man, the ideal character. And it's really, I mean, that's one of the great things about Ayn Rand, I'm sure you'd agree, because it's Howard Roark, if The Fountainhead is the first one of her books that you read, as it was for me. Wow, there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
There's the ideal.
Right.
You know, when I read it, my reaction was, that's the ideal. I didn't have it quite so clear until I read this book.
Right.
So that's fortunate when you get a fiction character like that. There's different ways to do it, but look for your heroes. And the hero is, you look at the hero and you look at what I do and what I encourage people to do. You look at the underlying principles that they're operating on. Their style and their manner isn't so crucial, but it's what they do. What really?
So you didn't paint your hair. You didn't paint your hair red when you read The Fountainhead.
Exactly.
Right.
You don't have to do that.
Right.
But you see, the better the more of an explicit idea you have of what you consider the ideal, and it has to be your ideal. It's not an imitation.
Right.
That's important. You're not trying to imitate, but the basic underlying abstract principles that motivate you, then, hey, you've got your substitute now for just blindly going on your feelings, which a lot of people do, or going with the group, or going with what others want you to do, or what you think others want you to do. And what you think others want you to do is often a projection. There's not even any basis for it. I mean, who are others? What are they?
Often they're just motivated by mischief anyway, actually, just to make you do something. And, it's not as if they actually, I mean, who's motivating them? But one of the key questions that I wanted to bring up, and this issue of heroes now seems to clarify it already, and that is, it seems to me that if we have an ideal, especially if that ideal is embodied in a hero, then it gives us a kind of a yardstick, a measure. We can see where we are. And, you know, it's the Batman effect, really, isn't it?
I like the Batman effect.
Yeah.
That's a great term for you to use, because that's what got you started.
Right. Yeah. So
your self-esteem development.
One of the things that I wonder about, because in a lot of other areas, it's not hard to measure. Like, for example, if you're running a business, you can check your profit and loss statement. If you're writing a song, well, it's a bit harder actually to work it out, but at least you've got a beginning and an end. But self-improvement, I just wonder whether there are any tips you could give about how to measure self-improvement. Are there any standards? Or do you need to just create those standards as you go? See what I'm saying?
There are objective standards.
Yeah.
They're not quantitative.
Right.
to my knowledge at all.
Yeah.
But here's an example. When people keep their journals, I always encourage people to write the date, including the year,
yeah,
in their journal entries. I encourage them to keep their journals, you know, on their computer file or handwritten or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
And to look back on it a year past or 2 years past.
Well, how scary.
And whenever people do that, I find, almost without exception, a pretty dramatic reaction. In
right.
the happy case, the reaction is, oh my gosh, the things that I was concerned about 1 year ago or
right.
3 years ago,
right.
I can't believe they don't even concern me anymore.
Right.
I've grown more than I realized. Or the way I reacted to that situation with all that guilt or whatever the neurosis was,
yeah.
I don't react that way anymore, hardly at all. And, of course, sometimes it is negative, too. Oh my gosh, I look back 3 years, it was the same thing.
Right.
You know, I'm going in circles.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
And then at that point I'll say, okay, well, then there's some more fundamental premise or issue that hasn't been checked or corrected, and it's there, and it's going to take a little more work to find it, but it's
yeah.
there. It's solvable. But
right.
a lot of times it is happy. I mean, I'm surprised by how often it's happy, even when people haven't been doing all they need to do for themselves. The happy meaning is the first of those two examples.
Right.
So that's one very good objective measure. You know, there are even more dramatic ones. If you think in terms of your relationship or marriage, if you've had several, one didn't work out, the next one is definitely a progression. Now, this is over a span of many years or even decades.
Right.
But sometimes people can say, well, you know, I have this or that issue in my relationship, but it's not serious, and it's infinitely better than, you know, the first time around.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you can't seek those sorts of things out, obviously.
I wonder, I think we fail at a certain thing, or we think we failed, we kind of get a bit superstitious about it. We think maybe we're jinxed in the area of relationships or in the area of making money or in something that we value.
Yes.
If we don't, do you find
yes.
that or not?
Yes.
It's kind of like, you know, we're jinxed.
Yes. People tend to get more superstitious about things that they don't understand. Even people that are consciously quite
good point. Yeah.
rational and commonsensical, they tend to default back to that. I find much more so in the area of personal relationships. A lot of times I'll hear from people, you know, is it something I'm doing wrong? You know, I'm attracting these people that are unhealthy.
Right.
Well, I always say, a lot of times when people say that, you know, they one or two dates and they realize the person is unhealthy and then they're done with them.
Yeah.
That's healthy. That's a healthy response. But then
right.
they say, yeah, but they're still gravitating towards me. Well,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, you can't be expected to know what they're like. There's a lot of screwy people out there. You just have to, you know.
I know. I always get, I just get worried because sometimes all these young, gorgeous ladies come towards me and I think, look, I'm married. You know, I mean, what's wrong with me? What is it? I'm an ugly guy and yet girls love me. Now, on that happy note, I'm just going to have a quick ad. And if you just excuse me a moment, my special guest
always
is
a good idea.
Dr. Michael Hurd. So I can say something crazy and then, you know, escape into an advertisement, you see.
How convenient.
Yeah. Got something special to say? Then send it in a bouquet. Send it today. Fresh, lovely, delightful flowers. Flowers are the perfect way to say thank you for your support, or I'm thinking about you, or I love you, Mum and Dad, or I'm so glad to be with you, darling. We've got flowers for every special occasion and for every special person in your life. You can select, purchase, and deliver your flowers online at ilovepros.com. You'll love shopping at the online megastore that loves to say, we love capitalism. Go to ilovepros.com. And like a fresh bouquet of gladioli, here's some more fresh thinking as we cross back to Dr. Michael Hurd on Protos Worldwide on the Solid Vox Network. Michael, I guess we're running out of time pretty fast, and I've got millions of things to ask you. Okay, so let's see. Okay, we're looking at basic principles of self-improvement. We've already identified, you've already given us a lot of very helpful items here. Just with this journal, is it a special kind of journal, or is it like just a regular diary? Or is it a journal of emotions and feelings?
Good question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real important that people recognize that they don't have to write down all the facts that go on during their day.
I see.
A psychological journal isn't mainly about facts, at least initially. It's about what you're feeling, about situations that go on in reality.
Right. Yeah.
And then later on, after that, immediately after if you can, or the next day if it's more complicated,
yeah.
you write down, you know, your rational analysis of your thinking and your take on things. And if you have a real struggle, that's where a good cognitive type therapist can be helpful. You know, you have talk sessions with them.
Right. Now, when you say
email, which I do,
when you say cognitive therapist,
you point out your area. Yeah. You know, you're jumping to conclusions, you're overgeneralizations, overpersonalizing, those sorts of things.
I see. So, cognitive therapist is someone who specializes in your thinking skills. Is that correct?
Right. Right. And, I mean, you have to find a good cognitive therapist because it's more or less the trend today for a therapist to say that, you know, they're a cognitive therapist, so they might not be much of anything. But if they're practicing it properly, they're helping you identify, A, your feelings, just like you do in a proper journal. A,
yeah.
Identify your feelings,
right.
And B, look at those feelings rationally and what thinking errors could there be?
Right.
You know, what distortions could there be?
Right, right.
And a good cognitive therapist will also help you translate this into action and not just stay at the level of consciousness, but also, you know, plan, we talked about your irrational fears here, so now let's send you out into the situation,
yeah.
Take it on and see if you can take it on with
yeah.
more confidence.
Do you find that when people do lay out their feelings and think about them, that they can usually solve the problem, work out the solution themselves? Is that what happens?
A lot of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times that's the case. The thing about therapy and psychology is that it's not an issue of intelligence. Intelligence is a different matter.
Right.
It certainly is an intelligent thing to introspect
mm-hmm.
and to understand why that's important, like we've been illuminating in this discussion.
Right.
But, we all have emotions sometimes that right on the face we think are silly or stupid or don't make sense, but
yeah.
we're feeling them nevertheless.
Yeah.
And we have to be aware of what we're feeling so that if it's something really self-defeating, we don't act on it.
Right.
And also, it's an opportunity to figure out what's going on back there. You know, what are some... A lot of this probably started in childhood. You know, different conclusions that we formed that were mistaken.
Yeah. Well, it probably started in the childhood of mankind, actually, because some of these habits
sure.
are just perpetuations that have gone for generations and centuries, if not millennia.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're
you know,
all... Listeners of the show know better than most, I imagine. You know, we're all exposed and pelted with mistaken ideas everywhere we turn.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if we're fortunate, we're in a context where there's a lot of contradictory ideas, some great and some mistaken. And,
right.
In other societies and cultures, you're just pelted with just evil ideas.
Right.
And,
okay,
and,
attitude is, as I see it, and please challenge me on this. An attitude is like a skill. It's a pattern that you have. You know, it's kind of like psychoepistemology. It's in other words, how does one develop deliberately an attitude? Because it seems like you start with an attitude, whereas you're suggesting, if I'm not mistaken, that you can develop attitudes. I mean, not just talking about the attitude of self-improvement, but maybe other attitudes as well. Is there a tip you could give us on that, Dr. Michael Hurd?
Well, an attitude implies a value judgment, and it implies
right.
that something has been thought out ahead of time, that the individual's been convinced that this is in their interest. For example, if you develop an attitude of self-awareness, that means on some level you have been convinced. I mean, someone might have argued it to you, but the point is you owned it in the end. You became convinced that it's true. That it's
yeah, but say
valuable.
You want a, say you want a new attitude. Say you've got attitude A, but now you want attitude B, which is different. You know what I'm saying? How do you?
Well, we can change. I talk about choosing your feelings sometimes. I mean, in a literal sense, that's not true. But
yeah.
when reason tells us that a certain emotion is mistaken, we can say to ourselves, okay, I'm having this emotion, but I know this emotion isn't true. I know that, you know, people aren't thinking ill of me in this situation, and I can choose to focus on that, even though I know there's no basis for it, or I can choose to think about it in a positive, more realistic way.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can't snap your fingers and do it all at once, usually.
Right.
But that's a sense in which you can choose individual feelings. Once reason has already intervened, or cognitive therapy has already intervened, but again, there's an implicit value judgment in all of this, and I talk about this in my book, Effective Therapy.
Yep.
The implicit value judgment in all of this is that reality and reason trump feelings. When the two conflict, reality and reason trump feelings. And that
right.
doesn't mean you repress your feelings. Obviously, that's not what I'm suggesting.
Okay.
But it does mean we have to pass judgments on our feelings and crack them when that's needed.
Right.
And not just throw our hands up helplessly and say, I can't do anything about it, because
that's
not true.
Yeah, even
and
if
that's
it, even
attitude
if,
all in itself.
Even if it feels true, it's not true, actually.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Now, my special guest is Dr. Michael Hurd, and I encourage you to visit Michael Hurd's website at drhurd.com. That's drhurd.com. You'll see a link right there where the interview is. Michael, you're an objectivist, right? A follower of Ayn Rand's philosophy.
Definitely, yes.
Okay. Now, have you always wanted to be a psychologist, even before you read Ayn Rand?
Oh, yes, yes. I didn't actually read Ayn Rand probably till my mid to late 20s.
Right.
But I knew I wanted to be a psychologist before I was 20.
Right, right.
Yeah, I was always interested in the human mind.
And is that how you got into Ayn Rand?
I wasn't one of those students who said, oh, I want to be a psychologist because I want to help people. I mean, I expected that. I knew if I was doing my job right, that would be an outcome.
Right.
But I would tell people, I want to understand the human mind. I want to understand what makes people tick and, you know, make an interesting living, you know.
Right.
This is a lot more interesting than, to me, you know, than sitting in an office doing something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
is discovering Ayn Rand, was that part of your exploration into the mind, into how people think?
Very much.
So it was part of that journey.
Very much.
Yeah.
Right. Her epistemology. I mean, I'm not a professional philosopher, but obviously I know a lot more because of her. I know a lot more about philosophy than the average Joe or the average psychologist. But her epistemology and her ethics, I think more so the ethics at first, was profoundly helpful to me because I recognized very quickly. Luckily, I had been practicing enough and had studied enough by the time I first started reading her that I could see, oh my gosh, she's in ethics. She has hit on a theme that applies to just about every patient that I see. And then the challenge becomes to, you know, help people integrate that. Most aren't objectivists.
Now, you're talking about
them integrate that the ethics, into their lives.
Are you talking about the ethics of rational self-interest? Is that the point there?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Countless people say to me, and this is not a generational thing, they can be in their 20s, well, I don't want to be selfish.
Yeah.
I feel selfish. And,
yeah.
You know, so I have to intervene on some level when they say that.
What do you say to someone who fears being selfish? Because just about everybody I meet will say that at some point.
It'll vary depending on the context, but one thing that I'll often say is, well, what's so wrong about being selfish?
Right.
And I try to invite them into a discussion about that, if I think they're up to that and if I think that point in the session is appropriate. Other times I might just make a statement that, you know, well, we all have to act in our self-interest, so, you know, we'll have to come back to that issue, but then I don't want to distract them because they're dealing with something more immediate.
Right.
And we get back to it later.
Well, at the moment, I've been running for pre-selection for the Liberal Party to try and run in the next state election here. So I've been getting a lot of advice from people on how I can improve myself. I pretty much ignored all of it, and I've been getting lots of publicity as a result because the media loves talking to me. But here's your chance, Dr. Michael Hurd. How can I, Prodos, improve myself? Come on, everybody else has had a go. I think you should have a chance too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Well, see, I don't know enough about what you're doing.
You don't know enough?
I like the way you conduct interviews.
Well, there you go. People tell me that I interrupt my guests too much. How about that? And they've been saying it to me for years, and you know what I reply? I say to them, well, that's because I get so excited, and I'm so curious and passionate, and the guest doesn't actually mind. But of course the listener minds, but then who cares? I mean, the point is, I'm not doing this for the listener.
I don't know that all
listeners
mind, because
that's
a consequence, exactly, because I've hosted radio myself,
right.
And I've been accused of that sometimes too.
Oh, right.
And I've worked on that some, because I realize sometimes it can be a better interview if I let the individual go on longer. But what you don't want to sacrifice is your enthusiasm and your excitement and keeping, you know, as the host, I know you're ultimately even more responsible for keeping the conversation interesting and exciting and entertaining as well as thought-provoking.
Right.
Distinguish between fundamentals, principles, and stylistic things.
Right. And so I think I'm too much of a show-off.
If you're right on the fundamentals, stylistic things don't matter too much.
Right. This is for me.
Don't try to be somebody else.
All right. So I shouldn't try to be... Okay, but anybody tries to be like me, it's hard for me to be like anybody else. That's a
exactly.
tough one. That's all right. Dr. Michael Hurd, it's always a great pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for joining us
likewise,
on Protos Worldwide. You've joined us on our new network, which I've set up. I'm the station manager. We're training seven new radio presenters on the SolidVox network right around the world, and we hope to expand and talk with you again on the show and promote great ideas.
My pleasure anytime, and all the best with your venture. I'm excited about it. I'm glad you're out there.
Thank you, Dr. Michael Hurd.